Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
On Friday, October 16th, the Norris Group proudly presented its 8th annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts joined Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. Proceeds from the event benefited Make-A-Wish and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. This event could not have been possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners. First Lending Solutions, Housing Wire, the Apartment Owners Association, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, Invest Club for Women, MVT Productions, Property Radar, the San Jose Real Estate Investors Association, and White House Catering.
The story is that one of the effects of the crisis not only affected the prospects of the younger people for employment, and today's 25 to 34-year-olds still have a higher unemployment rate than that same group had 10 years ago, and their median real income is $8,000 lower than that group 10 years ago. But the interesting thing was it was also the parents who suffered significant economic damage. So the parents of those 18 to 22-year-olds, 70% of them said this is a good thing they're living at home. A lot of that is their college age. College costs have risen twice as fast as inflation for the last 20 years. So living at home can cut college costs. That's pretty rational and understandable experience. But 63% of those with the 23 to 34-year-olds also said it's a good thing. Turns out, when you looked at the employment prospects of the parents, they had also lost significant income earning potential in that time period. So those older kids are making a contribution to the parents' household. Still, that younger group today is the most optimistic about the investment value of homes, and over 90% of them want to own a home eventually.
Okay, eventually.
Eventually.
Okay. And that's an important word because there's in economics there's something called an output gap. So let's say you wanted to retire at 65 and you said, if I make 8% a year, I'm going to get there at this point. And then you have the Great Recession and you take a big chunk out of it. That's sort of what happened to household creation. And your investments may not come back, but it's pretty certain that that 28 or 35-year-old will someday have a household. And that means we have pent-up household creation at some point that's going to show up. What do you think that time frame is? Is that more economic than it is habit-formed?
It is economic. Take that real median income story that I just told you. The household formation rate for the first half of this decade was roughly half of the 35-year-old average. 35-year average, which is about 1.2 million households per year. So for the first half of this decade, it was about half that rate.
Okay.
It started to grow, and our expectation is the second half it will get back to that average, which means there's still catch-up to be done going into the next decade. So from a demographic perspective, the U.S. actually has a pretty good demographic profile. The millennials are even a larger group than the boomers were.
Right.
So looking forward, the prospects for real estate are strong.
For demand, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. I couldn't resist this one. I was thought, like, I think back, what was full employment? What was the number? And I thought it was 5. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we are now at 5%-ish unemployment and a 2% 10-year T-bill.
Yeah, that's a bogus number.
Well, of course it is, but maybe, okay. Go ahead. You mean we're not counting some people?
Oh, you know, you count the people that left the workforce, but I mean, you know, the real number is, you know, north of 11%, I guess, right? Something close to that.
If you count the underemployed.
Oh, if you count those other people out there, yeah, that's right.
Now here's a legitimate question.
I got a call.
Go ahead.
From my son, who's a junior at the University of Kentucky. I live in Kentucky. And he said, hey, Dad, I got straight A's this semester. I said, wow, Zach, that's great. You've been a C student. What happened? He said, I just threw out 3 tests on each class.
And that was it, huh? Well, now, but see, is it consistently been that way, or is that a new development? So when I look at the chart from 75 or 80, are they telling me a lie at that point? So then the chart is consistently incorrect, and I feel comfortable with it.
You're the numbers guy.
Well, yeah, there's lies, damn lies, and statistics.
Right. Right? So, so why don't you give us some lying statistics?
The why I bring it up, because the last time, we don't have 5% unemployment very often.
Right.
But when we did it in 97 to 01, the 10-year T-bill was ranged in that 4 years between 5 and 6.5, and mortgage rates were 6.75 to 8.5. And that's pretty consistent. We got there in 73 and another time, but the mortgage rates were 7 to 8.5, and now they're below 4. So as an economist, you know, what do you think of that? Why is that true? Those sets of numbers have never existed before, 5% unemployment and this interest rate.
Well, underneath your description is an assumption that what is called the Phillips curve is a valid economic concept.
Okay.
And what the Phillips curve is there was an economist named Phillips who suggested there is a trade-off, a mathematically dependable trade-off, between the level of unemployment and the level of inflation. So that if unemployment falls below a certain level, that will lead to wage pressures that will show up in the inflation measures. That was actually pretty well discredited in the 1980s. I think it's being discredited again today. That doesn't stop the Federal Reserve, who is primarily a Keynesian-oriented organization, from viewing that as a key measure for what they do with interest rates. To talk a little bit about the structure of our workforce, though, to validate Dave's comment about whether people are actually being counted, the workforce participation rate of working age men has been falling for about 40 years. And by that, that's men the ages of 16 to 54. It was disguised until the year 2000 by the fact that the workforce participation of working-age women was rising.
Okay.
Their participation peaked in 2000, and so the workforce participation rate in total has been declining since 2000. It became precipitous in the middle of the crisis, and it still hasn't recovered from there. So really one of the key questions is why is that the case? And that's not well understood. And so you're referring to Janet Yellen's comments that say, well, I think there's actually more slack in the market. And truthfully, if you look at the number of working age people, there is more slack. The question is, what will happen in terms of wage rates to bring them back into the market? And go back to that comment I made about the real incomes of 25 to 34-year-olds. That's not happening. What needs to be done, and this is Doug's view, it's why Fannie Mae always makes me put up this disclaimer that says Fannie Mae will deny I was ever here. I used to give them a reason. The focus of economic policy needs to be on income creation as opposed to income redistribution. Because what has happened, it's always the case in a strongly growing economy that the distribution of those returns is different across the span of households. But we've had, for the last several years, a focus on the redistribution issue, and there's no long-term evidence that if that's the focus of policy, incomes grow, and they certainly have not grown for roughly the last decade.
But I thought the best way to raise income was just to raise it, like just raise the minimum wage, so I...
You're talking in front of the right group on that one.
So.
You're not going to touch that one.
I was not here tonight either. So.
You know,
was that our wives leaving?
I think so.
We've been waiting for an interest rate hike. And then, just for fun, I pulled up the concept of negative interest rates. And so, what is a negative interest rate, and is that a policy that could be implemented, and what would the result be? Anybody?
Well, you see negative interest rates, both nominal and real, that is, including inflation, and not in some significant countries in Europe,
right.
Some major economies.
Right.
What does that mean? It basically means people paying the government to hold their cash for
right.
the short term. I have to say, none of the economic textbooks I was trained on suggested that was even a remote possibility.
Yeah.
So this is kind of uncharted territory. The way I think about it is kind of ties back to a call I got from my mother when TARP was voted down the first time. She said, Douglas, which means I'm in trouble. If it was Douglas George, I'd have hung up. Said, we paid our mortgage. What are you people doing with our money? Right? The result of that has been that she gets 0.25% interest on her savings.
Right.
And she's 90.
Right.
So there's inflation, which you were talking about in the example you gave in the 70s and
right.
80s, destroys the purchasing power of your dollar. Right, so a dollar today, if there's inflation of 5%, you can buy 5% less with it a year from now. If financial repression, which is what I would argue is being done with negative interest rates and interest rates arbitrarily close to zero, has essentially the same effect in that it's destroying income growth. And so you're actually taking away from the public the ability to preserve or expand their wealth. And that's really what's happening today.
It's beneficial for an asset like real estate or a stock.
It is.
Okay.
It is. But in the short run.
Right.
In the long run, that's...
Well, I guess that's kind of the... We've kind of pegged ourselves... I wouldn't want to read... Where's the national price right now as opposed to the last peak?
The
national housing price?
Average sale price?
Yeah. Or not, I think it's the median. It's close enough to the peak that it's sort of on the backs of this 3% mortgage rate. See, that's sort of hard because if you ever normalize rates, and I'm sure at some point we will, there's an equation that's going to come about where the payment is going to be greater than somebody can qualify for.
Sure. So can I digress just for
sure,
a second?
Sure, please.
All kidding aside, so my wife, who's with me here tonight, we are blessed to have 4 healthy children. And very blessed. 2 girls, 2 boys, all millennials, 35 to 21. And 2 of them are homeowners, both the girls. They both have college degrees. The boys are struggling. So whatever that means. So our youngest daughter, Paige, relocates with her husband this week to Honolulu because he flies helicopters for the Coast Guard, and they bought their first home this week, all right? A 4-bedroom, if that's what you want to call it, I've seen it online, 4 little boxes for a room in Hawaii for $600,000+. It's her first house. And she's calling me. I'm getting emails while we're sitting over here. Would you look at this disclosure? Do I sign this? I'm going, I don't know, I guess.
You're not in that business anymore.
It had TRID all over it. I don't know what the hell it meant. So, but think about that. First-time home buyers at 25 years old buying a house for almost $600,000+. But it's because of low interest rate, and he's getting a bump in income through the military, or they couldn't afford to live over.
Now,
so,
Okay.
It's low interest rates.
Okay.
We don't have a free market. I'll just say it. When you've had manipulated interest rates now for, what, 7 years?
Yeah.
6.5, 7 years?
Yeah.
It's 0%. If you want it to be free, we need to let interest rates go to wherever they need to go. And the market will adjust around it. And so will incomes. And to Doug's point, people who are on Social Security or investments or whatever, then those interest rates will rise. But we've manipulated everything for the last 6.5 or 7 years and held it down. So we really don't know where we are at this point.
The big price tag there, too, is you've got promises to retired workers who expected that...
Unfunded mandates.
Right. But they expected this journey of interest rate to be there. And for
so
that
what came out this week? There's no raise in Social Security.
Right.
That's
right.
That?
Yeah.
Aren't they happy?
Yeah.
So go ahead, Doug. Just a comment on interest rate behavior. If you think back to the taper tantrum in May of 2013, Chairman Bernanke talked for the first time about the fact that the Fed would eventually stop purchasing mortgage-backed securities and treasuries to expand their portfolio. So simply the statement led to about 110 basis point rise in mortgage rates. So what happened at the beginning of 2014? Home sales fell, right? So there is a relationship between income growth and interest rate change. If interest rate, the long-term interest rate, take out the last 5 years of the 1970s, and you go back to the end of World War II out to the year 2000, the average 30-year fixed-rate mortgage was 6%.
Okay.
Housing did pretty well, growing over that entire time period, right? But incomes also grew pretty well. What happened in the taper tantrum is that the interest rates rose much faster than incomes did, so it put people out of the market. It wasn't that house prices fell, it's that the number of homes sold fell. Then when rates came back down over the next 6 months, the pace of sales picked up. So there's an important lesson there. It is the change in rates relative to the change in incomes. So again, the fact that we've had very little change in real income in the people that would be the first-time home buying category is part of the reason we've seen the move over to the rental side of the equation. But there's a couple other things about interest rates and housing. If interest rates are rising because the economy is expanding, that usually means real incomes are rising and housing does just fine as long as it's not a rapid rise in rates.
Okay.
If interest rates are rising because households expect inflation to be rising, they view housing as an intermediate term hedge against inflation and housing does just fine. If interest rates are rising because the Fed sees inflation increasing and is trying to slow the economy, that also slows employment and income growth, and then the number of homes transacted falls, but not price. Note, I didn't say anything about price in any of that. So there's a pretty well-established pattern between rate behaviors. A lot of what's critical is the pace of change of rates and the pace of change in incomes.
The pace of change is not usually slow, right? And that's just in looking at the history of when something decides to go up, it's like it has change after change after change, and the volatility can be quite severe. Not severe might be... I got into the business in 80, 81, and there were 21 Fed fund rate changes in 1 year. So this group of people are completely not used to volatility at all.
Well, that goes back to what Dave was saying about whether it's a function of market changes or a function of monetary policy. So what you're talking about is rapid rate rises by the Fed.
Is that what I said?
That's what you said.
Oh.
Okay. I've been taking notes.
Good.
You'll be on the quiz.
I'm glad.
You can drop three.
Good. I feel pretty... Thank you. I feel smart tonight sitting next to you, let me tell you.
We've only got a couple more minutes for this segment, so I just wanted to ask, because the group of here is investors, I have to ask about bulk note sales for just a second, and Fannie Mae. You guys still have bulk note sales, correct?
I've heard.
You've heard of that? Okay. why is that still occurring in a market that doesn't have a lot of foreclosures? Is that the highest and best use to get rid of them, or is it the best way for the occupant owner still to get some kind of modification be possible?
Well, in those sales are highly concentrated geographically.
Right? Okay.
I mean, the majority of our seriously delinquent loans are in really three states.
Right, Jersey, Florida, and whatever.
Not California. in Nevada.
Okay.
So it's the question is whether there's sufficient demand in those spaces to see the kind of price recovery that you would see in other parts of the country, and the answer is no. The bulk sales are affected in a way that's intended to help potential sustainable homeowners ultimately take those properties and live in them. But I can see where you would want to go with this, which is why not let private investors into that space?
Just another route. In other words, I looked at there was 37 months to that bulk sale.
This is why Fannie Mae says they'll deny that I was ever here.
Okay.
Because I would agree with you. I'm a market-oriented economist. And I think part of the problem that we're still seeing in the housing market is that that prices were not allowed to be market determined in many instances, but rather were managed.
Right.
Excuse me.
Okay. Last question for this segment. Within the next 24 months, do you see any ability for the mortgage world to become more aggressive with loan products and policies within the next 24 months? That undue stimulus that we're looking for, or not looking for, but in other words, is that going to be a factor that isn't present now, in your opinion?
So I answer it this way, in all seriousness. If you believe MBA statistics, which I do, the greatest portion of home buyers will be Hispanic or African American. The white guys sitting here like Doug and I and you, we're going to be at the low end of it. They need loan programs developed so they can purchase the house.
Okay.
They don't exist today for some of the people that are buying. So here's the answer to your question. The market is set to explode from a single family purchase perspective over the next, and I'm going to go out farther than you, 6 to 8 years, it should explode.
In between then or starting then?
Starting then.
Starting then. Yeah, okay, so, 5 years from now. Okay.
Incomes are down. Interest rates have to be released and go up. I'm not an economist. Doug can correct me if I'm wrong. It has a negative effect initially when rates go up. You get an initial bump. When rates start to go up, everybody gets off the fence, they run out and buy.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate. Adrenaline Athletics, Coachella Valley Real Estate Investors Association, Coldwell Banker Town and Country, Elite Auctions, iMortgage, In a Day Development, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Jennifer Buys Houses, Keller Williams Corona, Keystone CPA, Kukan and Clark, Las Brisas Escrow, LA South RIA, Lavis Tax Wealth Management, National RIA, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, North San Diego Real Estate Investors, Pasadena Phoebe, Pilot Limousine, Orange County Phoebe, Real Wealth Network, Realty 411 Magazine, Resonant Lens Photography, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Sacramento Real Estate Club, Capital City Wealth Builders, Southern California Chapter of the Appraisal Institute, Sonoka Corporation, Spinnaker Loans, Tri-Counties Association of Realtors, UDirect IRA Services, Weston South Coast Plaza, Wilson Investment Properties, Inc. See isurvivedrealestate.com for event video and sponsor information.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.